It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. The U.S. National Snow Sculpting Championship is underway at Winterfest in Lake Geneva. It's 15 teams from around the nation putting their artistry to the test, carving from massive 10-foot tall snow blocks. Call in with your questions about snow and ice sculptures, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Bob Lechtenberg is a founding member of the snow sculpting team, Sculptora Borealis, the defending national champions. Bob, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you for having me.
Just getting an update here on the weather. You know, the forecast says Lake Geneva will have a high temperature of 5 degrees today, low negative in the negative one. How does the bitter cold affect your team and affect snow sculpting?
It's perfect. It's much better for us than even 20 degrees and sunny. Yesterday, even though it was still cool, the sun can still impact what we do on the blocks. So it made the one edge softer. You can't get the level of detail that you would like with some of these intricate sculptures.
So
the cold weather,
the colder,
really
the better.
The detail. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if it gets too cold, you know, obviously there's the health aspect of it. You know, difficult for the carvers, but we all have gear that keeps us warm. A lot of carvers will use ice fishing gear, snowmobiling gear, but gear that's meant to be outside for long periods of time in the cold.
How long is the day outside on a typical carving day here in the competition?
So typical, our team ends up going, well, some members start earlier, some members work later, but in general, I would say from 8 a.m. until 11 p.m. or midnight is kind of our common day. And then certain days will go longer or shorter, but usually that is probably our most common timing.
How do you ward off exhaustion and keep the momentum going?
You do lunch breaks, dinner breaks, and then in between there's a hospitality room for us so we can take a break, go in, grab some water, some tea, some coffee. Snacks are available for us. So just kind of each of those breaks, and then the camaraderie between the snow sculpting teams is almost like a family atmosphere. So a break, we'll go to our neighbor's blocks and see how they're doing, you know, what their challenges are, how it's coming along. You know, talk to them about what they're doing, and we'll visit, you know, the whole row that we're in and kind of see everybody's progress. It's a great atmosphere.
And it's like a mini reunion at every competition. I would imagine you've seen these teams before.
It is, yeah. This one actually is a little bit special because we did a show, which is on Disney Plus right now, called Best in Snow. And I was part of that show, and there were 10 professional carvers, and then a few additional carvers that helped out kind of behind the scenes. And 8 out of those 10 from the show are actually here at the competition this year. So it was great to have a little show reunion for those of us that were a part of it.
Sounds like they caught the bug of snow sculpting.
It's catching around. Yeah, there's a few things in the works that are making it a little bit more public facing.
Is there a difference between working with manufactured snow or natural snow? Talk to us about snow integrity, if you will.
There is, yeah. The key part about a snow sculpture is that it has to be compressed. And so no matter what snow you're using, you have to get in, you build a form, and then you stomp it and tamp it down and really make sure that it gets into all the edges so that there's no crevices. And that pushes the snow down. Depending on the temperature, if it's warmer out, that'll pack a lot quicker. You can think of it just like a snowman, right? If you have wet packing snow, it packs very quickly. If you have dry snow, you've got to let it sit for a little bit while longer. And that allows all of the snow molecules to kind of crunch together and really become one surface. And so that's how the block is formed. Whether it's artificial or man-made doesn't matter too much. I actually prefer, or I should say artificial or natural. I prefer the natural snow. The consistency is just a little bit better with the man-made snow. You end up usually getting small ice chunks into it mixed in with the actual snow. And that can cause some headaches for when you're imagine putting a chisel through and one surface of the snow is relatively soft and smooth, and then you hit the ice chunk and that's harder. And so now you're dealing with differing pressures at various pressure points and pieces on the sculpture. And so it's great to have the overall consistency.
You need that same consistency throughout. How would you characterize the snow you're working with in this competition? What is this Lake Geneva snow like?
So this is, usually I would say we find a good amount of ice chunks in it. For this year, it's actually the best snow that we've had here, I would say, in quite a while. Maybe the best that I've ever seen here. So it's a really good year for the snow. The temperatures are going to work out great. It's a great year to come down. I know they put it through, one of the ways to get rid of some of those ice chunks is to put it through a grinder or snowblower. So I know that they did that this year, and I think that probably made a good difference. But yeah, it's a great year to come down and check it out.
Talking about the art of snow sculpting with Bob Lechtenberg on the line, founding member of the competitive sculpting team Sculptora Borealis. You can join in with your questions at 800-642-1234. So Bob, you're also a longtime competitive ice sculptor. What are the differences between sculpting with snow versus ice?
The biggest difference is just the scale. It's so much easier to get a much larger scale on snow than it is on ice. So that would be what I would say is number one. The surface is also easier to work with. We have more tools with snow just because you're allowed, you can get into it easier. It doesn't take, you know, a sharp, fine chisel or chainsaw or specialty bit on a die grinder. You know, we can use roofing shovels and maybe we'll file the edge off just a little bit. You know, hand saws, sandpaper that you would have on a belt sander. And then of course your various chisels and things too. And there's a lot of specialty tools that we'll custom make, but you're just able to do a lot more with snow. So I've switched and I hardly do any ice anymore. I'm primarily focused on the snow now.
How do you know what is the right tool to use when there is such a, sounds like a wide variety of tools that are at your disposal?
Yeah, it's all experience. First few years, you're trying out various things and testing them out. Some of it we can test out. Like when we were first starting, we would build, you know, a small form just at our house. And then you can test out a tool and see how it, you know, how it reacts. You can use a 5-gallon bucket, trash can, you know, whatever you have around the house that can hold snow, and just fill it with snow, stomp it down, and then flip it over. And there you have a very small thing to practice with. But that at least allows you to test out how the tools interact with the snow.
What's your favorite ice sculpting tool in the toolbox?
We have specialty tools that come from China. They're called pickle forks. They come in various widths, but in essence, think of it like a hair trimmer or, you know, a sheep shear trimmer, but at a much beefier scale than that. So our favorites are probably about 5-6 inches wide. They've got a good weight to them and they really cut through the snow well.
I'll never think of a hair trimmer in the same way. Bob Lechtenberg is a member of the Wisconsin snow sculpting team, Sculptora Borealis. He's been snow sculpting since 2017, 3 national titles under his belt. Call in about snow and ice sculpting. What you wonder about the process, the tools, the teamwork, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We learn about competitive snow sculpting from a founding member of the Wisconsin team, Sculptora Borealis. Bob Lechtenberg is here, his team, the defending national champions, the U.S. Snow Sculpting Championship underway along Lake Geneva's frozen shoreline, featuring 15 teams, 11 states, carving from these massive snow blocks. Join in with your questions, your stories about ice and snow sculpting, 800-642-1234. Let's go to Lynn in Racine. Lynn, hi, what's your question?
Well, good morning. I was wondering how the theme is picked for the sculpture contest.
Lynn, thanks. How do you go about coming up with the theme and the creative process behind it?
So some competitions do have themes. They're usually decided upon by like the Chamber of Commerce or, you know, whatever organization is putting the event together. For the national title, there is no theme. So it is artist choice. That allows the artist to really do what they want and come up with something that, you know, has, at least for our pieces, like we really like to try to tie a stronger message into our piece when we can to make the viewers think a little bit. And not just look at something that's, you know, kind of fun. Hopefully it'll be fun too, and very interesting to look at, but we try to give them a little bit something extra. But yeah, so this one, there is no theme. Some of the competitions that do have themes, then you just start out and branch off of that theme to ideate kind of what you are thinking of and what your teammates might be willing to do. And even for this competition, there's a whole ideation process that we go through as well.
And your theme that you came up with as a team is mental health. Can you take us into the design?
So this design, a little bit personal to us. There was a sculpting member that passed away this year due to some mental health challenges. He was a 10-time U.S. national champion snow sculptor. So we decided to kind of tweak this design just a little bit to really highlight the mental health. And give a little tribute to him. For us, the design that we're doing this year is it's a female kind of warrior figure. And what it ended up having was one arm kind of reaching up toward the sky. Her gaze is up toward the sky, eyes will be closed. And just kind of in a almost a solemn mode, asking for help, more or less. Like that's kind of the intent behind it. The title of the piece is You Are Not Alone. And so we wanted to raise awareness, you know, that there are mental health challenges out there, and there is help available. So we've got a piece of snow right out in front by our kind of introduction block. And that piece has the mental health hotline #988 number to it. And we've gotten a few comments already from people that have walked by and, you know, thanks for bringing up that topic. We've had a few people from Prevention Services that have come up and appreciated that we're raising awareness to it and bringing people, you know, into the notion that it's okay to ask for help if you're struggling.
So this has been a real emotional sculpting project for your team. How do you talk about that as you go about the design and as you work these long hours of carving? What comes up about mental health?
We're usually pretty focused on the block itself. The aspects of it really came up beforehand with the design process. We did have an initial design where it was just a female figure. And she was more of an aggressive form, battling, you know, whatever it was, the demons, or for a while we had spiders, you know, something that would represent just her fears or challenges. And then once our friend passed away, we kind of switched it a little bit more to the help aspect. You know, we'll get people that come by and stop by the block and make a comment, and we'll pause for a minute and talk to them. And, you know, usually it's just something like, you know, they'll thank us for having the topic at hand. And, you know, we'll of course acknowledge that. But we don't usually get into too much of the details of the theme or the thing that we're going into. One of the ones that we did a few years ago as well was kind of made people think about our usage of technology devices. So we had a brain that was very holy, like Swiss cheese, and portions that were kind of melting, and it was being held up by a robotic hand, and it was in front of a cell phone. So again, you know, thinking about how much are we using it? Is it impacting us in a certain way? And there were a lot of, seemed to be a bit number of older people that came up to us and said, oh, that's exactly what I talk about with my kids. So, you know, there's some aspects of those things that, you know, when you can engage the audience and it really makes it a satisfying process because you're building that connection with somebody through the art.
Yeah. Giving it something to talk about, sending a message. We heard from Kay in La Crosse and wants to know a bit about the sculptors' artistic backgrounds on your team, and wondering Are they artists who work in other media? Do you have to have an arts background to be on your team? Can you take us into the artistic background?
My team is a little bit unique. We are not artists. Our closest artist did go to school for art, Josh. So he went to school, did a bunch of art things, but ended up kind of finding his way into industrial design. And so that kind of bridges the gap between, I would say, art and engineering. The other two members here were engineers by education. I'm actually a project manager in my day job for kind of IT and consulting. And so we each end up having our various roles. Josh does, you know, the majority of the figure work. If we have anatomy forms, he'll take point on those. Any of the more complicated artistic portions, he'll do that. The second member, Mike, who actually happens to be my dad, has more art background than I do. So he'll kind of fill in with the anatomy points for any of the figures, help out Josh in kind of that primary. So he becomes our secondary. And then usually we have some sort of shaping or, you know, twisting to turning type of ribbon. That's usually where I come in, and kind of those general shapes where I can follow the model and then, you know, find my points and carve out whatever that model shows for the components. So that's usually how we end up splitting. My other role, of course, as project manager is to make sure that we're making the progress that we need to and where we need to put more attention or less attention, or where we need to kind of wrap something up and move on to the next thing to make sure that we can get the piece done in the amount of time that we have.
Talking about the art of snow sculpting with Bob Lechtenberg as our guide, founding member of the competitive sculpting team, Sculptora Borealis, and they are entering day three of the national championships, which are being held along the shores of Lake Geneva. You can call in at 800-642-1234 with questions and stories. Allison now in La Crosse. Hi, Allison.
Hello, good morning. Yes, I have a couple of questions. I'm wondering what the cost is to host an event like this and what the prize winnings can be and how one would go about hosting an event like this. Thank you. I'll take the answer off there.
Thank you, Allison. Bob.
Good questions. Some of them I don't truly know. So from a cost perspective, it's a lot of work. A lot of times there's quite a large number of sponsors. There's people that donate time and effort. In particular, if you're hosting an event that doesn't always have a lot of natural snow, that's the first component you need, snow. So you have to work with, you know, a ski hill or somebody that has a snowmaker to be able to get the quantity of snow that you would need for a competition. If you can get that ski hill to donate that snow, excellent. If you cannot, that sometimes is a pretty costly endeavor. So that's one. And then, you know, how do you get that snow to the site? If it's being made at a ski resort, then you would need, you know, equipment, whether that's, you know, bobcats, front end loaders, dump trucks, to be able to move that snow from one site over to the other. From a sculpting perspective, we want that snow to be clean. So if you just use a dump truck that came off of a job hauling dirt, that's not going to be very good for the quality of your snow sculptures. So there's aspects of that tie into it as well. But really, that for the bigger competitions, the city will get involved, the Chamber of Commerce for that area will get involved. There's an organization that does an excellent job, Winter Fun. They do both the U.S. National and the World Championship, which is held in Stillwater, Minnesota.
Oh, we can claim Stillwater. Well, you're good.
It's close. It's right across the river.
We'll claim Stillwater.
Yes. So, but Winter Fun kind of organizes this. They've got their playbook down. They've been doing it here in Lake Geneva for the last 28 years, I believe now. The U.S. National is in its 38th year. So they've got the process down. They're certainly a good one to reach out to. You can reach out to us as well at any point in time, where you have facebook.com/sculptoraborealis or sculptoraborealis@gmail.com. And and we can help get into that process as well.
Let's pause right there with Bob Lechtenberg, member of the snow sculpting team, Sculptora Borealis. Join in the conversation, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The 38th annual U.S. National Snow Sculpting Championship is entering its third day along the shores of Lake Geneva. 15 teams competing from a variety of states across the nation. Call in with your questions about the snow sculpting community, what it takes, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. We have Bob Lechtenberg of the Wisconsin Championship team, Sculptora Borealis, stays with us. Bob, let's turn to the international aspect of this. Participants from countries last month, Finland, Argentina, carved snow for the World Snow Sculpting Championship, you mentioned, in Stillwater. How does having international competition influence the sport?
Good question. From an international standpoint, there are various competitions all around the world. To be honest, I'm not sure of too many in the Southern Hemisphere, but at least in the Northern Hemisphere, the biggest few I would say would be Harbin in China. There's one in Sapporo in Japan. I think there's a couple others also in Japan. I'm sure there's others in China as well. But even Russia, Mongolia, in Europe, France, Italy, Austria, quite a large number that are out there. Canada hosts a number of them as well. And so it really expands that community and to have the teams that travel and make it from one country to another and putting on an event like that and being able to meet and have people from all around the world. And then we do have a Facebook group that is a snow sculptors only group. And so then you can keep in contact with those international team members. And I know that there's some that have traveled to visit these other sculptors at non-sculpting times, just to visit and see another part of the world.
I wonder, how are skills in snow sculpting passed on? I wonder, is it an open source philosophy, how you learn about the art and how you pass it on?
It has gotten more that way. Especially with this Facebook group that I mentioned, people are very open. The sculptors are very open and want to expand the art, right? We want more people to get into snow sculpting. And so to try to put the best artistic pieces out there, people will ask questions on that group. And there will be a number of others that will chime in. What's the best marker to use on the snow? How do you guys build your forms? So there's all of that where the community itself is trying to improve and bring awareness. And one of my partners, Josh, and I actually have an aspect that we're trying as well. We did a promotional piece up at Michigan Tech, and we did a workshop for them, and they're doing some video work for us and editing that. With our goal is to be able to bring that program from a professional videography standpoint and have an instructional how-to that we could take back to either other colleges, other high schools, maybe down to the middle school age, and get younger kids to be interested in it and building that creativity. And especially in the wintertime, you're oftentimes so stuck inside. This would be one of those ways to have an outlet and get creative and get kids outside and get them playing in the snow and building something, more than just a snowman, but actually trying to make some curves and have a design that they could have in mind and put it out into something physical.
You mentioned video, but how do you plot out what you want to sculpt? Like, what are some pre-planning tools that you use to plan that sculpture?
Yeah, so we'll come up with our idea, and we've got a spreadsheet where we kind of start, and then we'll talk that through The initial stages, primarily Josh for us, he's the best sketcher, so he'll do some sketching of some of the ideas, and we can kind of get a general sense for what it would potentially look like. And then once we really lock in on an idea, we'll make it in clay.
That's
really the design. We end up creating that maquette, which is a scale model. So every inch on our clay model represents 1 foot in the actual block. So we'll have a grid pattern there. We'll know what size of block we can work with, and then everything becomes scale on that clay model. We can move things around on the clay model, test out how different aspects look, but then that becomes our reference point for when we come onto the site. We have that right on site. We have a number of rulers. You take it up, there's a grid pattern on the board. Sometimes we'll put the grid pattern onto the clay itself and project it up. Some teams have like a casing that they put over it that has a grid pattern on it. So as long as you line up with that grid pattern, you can see, okay, at 3 feet high and 4 feet from the right and, 2 feet in from the edge that I'm at, that's one of my key points. So then you can kind of get to that point and shave off all the rest. So ultimately you're just finding, what that design is inside that big block, and you can just get rid of anything that's empty space.
What happens when there's a problem in competition as you carve, when an aspect of the carving fails or isn't going as planned through what you envisioned in the clay model?
We try to avoid those as much as possible, but it does happen. There's generally the easiest way to repair something, I guess, is we call it a process, slushing is what we call it. But it's basically taking some of the snow that you've shaved off. So it's got to be really fine, powdery snow. Depending on the competition, sometimes there's a little bit different color to the actual snow on the block than there would be in just the powder around the site. So we'll use a grater, kind of like a cheese grater, to sand off some of the snow from the block or spare pieces. And then we'll add a small amount of water to that and mix it up in a bucket. And that creates, just to the point where you can get it to be packing. And that creates the slush that we use to then, correct any mistakes or if there's gaps. Sometimes there'll be holes within the blocks if it wasn't packed down or there's an area that was kind of missed. So sometimes you have to pack those in. So we'll use that slush with that as well. But you can add on to a point. Obviously, that takes time. So you try to avoid those possibilities. But if something falls off or if there's not enough space for something, or a lot of times we'll expand up. And so we'll take a portion or a different, a subset of the block and then move it up to the top of the block and just make sure that your two surfaces are relatively clean and able to mate together. And then you add some of that slush and then, slush in the seam, and that creates a nice solid structure.
Oh, wow. It's just like the collision of engineering and art. It's all coming together. Let's take another call. Tony in Sturgeon Bay. Tony, hi. Hi, Tony. Can you hear us?
Morning.
Good morning.
Yes, I can. Thank you. I love the work. I've been to the Lake Geneva Snow Sculpting Festival several times. How do you do with the impermanence, like sand sculpting, that your work is going to be short-lived? And you have to separate yourself from the art and know that it's just going to melt.
Oh, that's such a great question, Tony. Thank you. How
We've
do you
got
do that?
Kind of two aspects with that. One, we know that going in, and there'll be times, like there was one year where we finished on Saturday and it was totally destroyed on Sunday because it got warm and it rained. But, we take our pictures, our kind of video walk around, and that's our finished piece. And so we have the pictures for the reference. But ultimately, that's just part of the artistic process. We are trying to go one step further. We didn't quite get to it this year, but we have all the supplies. But our kind of goal for next year, and some teams started doing this year. We saw, I think, one at the World Competition. There's at least one, maybe two here. We're starting to use 3D printing. So you can plug your design, if you can manage the computer software aspect of it, into that computer software, And then send it out to a 3D printer. And then your maquette, instead of using clay, becomes that, you know, plastic resin or whatever you're using for your 3D printing. That would allow you to then keep that, you know, after the fact, and have whatever that maquette was or whatever that design was as part of the process. So that might be, it might be an aspect that we get into later on as well. One of our thoughts is, if a piece really resonates with people, you know, would there be an interest of somebody, you know, having that model with them at their house? So if we can get some of our designs into that program, even some of our past ones that we've won, last year's is a piece that moved a lot of people. It was called Deeper Connections. You know, that might be something that that people would be interested in. And that's another way that we can expand the snow sculpting community into something that lasts a little bit longer.
Is every competition a new sculpture design, or do you sculpt someone's over again, or build off a previous design?
Everyone is pretty much new. There's, for a lot of the competitions, some of the judging criteria usually has to deal with originality or creativity. So we never sculpt the same thing twice. Every once in a while, you'll sculpt the same sort of subject, say an octopus. Especially with the octopus, is because there's, you know, the tentacles can flow anywhere. And so it creates, you know, there's an ability with you know, tentacle work to create more of a broad-based sculpture as opposed to just kind of something in the middle, right? Those tentacles can go wherever you need them to kind of visually capture and be aesthetically pleasing to the eye. So sometimes you'll kind of latch onto a subject a little bit, but really it's a new design every competition.
Let's go to Marcus in Milwaukee. Marcus, what's on your mind?
Hi. So I love that you said the octopus, because I recommend having it where it's Captain Morgan tangling with the Kraken. I think that would be amazing. I think that we should have some sort of international competition, Kate, down in Antarctica, where our scientists actually like do some sort of ice sculpting, you know, contest for amongst the different countries, as, you know, some form of a fundraiser to raise money for climate change, to address like lower lying countries that are already struggling, that just don't seem to have the economies or whatever. And as a thing of kind of national pride, but like not allow ringers to come in. It just have to be the scientists down there.
So really making climate change front and center through competitive snow sculpting. What do you make of that, Bob?
So we have done pieces that have spoken to the climate change aspect. The team last year for the Wisconsin State tournament did a polar bear on a melting popsicle. And again, it was, you know, to kind of raise awareness that things are changing. And, you know, that there is an aspect of that we have to deal with in Lake Geneva itself, right? Last week was warm. This week is really cold. Next week is going to be warm again. And so if you have the wrong timing, then the snow sculpture competition becomes much greater of a challenge if you're carving in 40, 45 degrees than if you're carving in 20 degrees. So there's definitely an aspect of that. I'd be very curious to see some of those scientists in Antarctica actually do some snow sculpting work. We haven't heard of too many scientists that are also snow sculptors and have that artistic side of things, but
throw it on the gauntlet there. But, you know, who judges these sculptures in the end, you know, for the U.S. championships and the world?
Yeah, for the U.S. and for the world championship, it's judged by the artists themselves. So we get a ballot. We can't vote for ourselves, but then we score what we think are the top five pieces, and then, you know, the person that we, you know, the team that we think gets number one, they end up with 5 points, and so then they tally all of those up, you know, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1s, and that's how they then declare the winner. So the artists judge themselves. We're the ones that know what goes into it, you know, where people may have expanded beyond the block, where some of their added complexity points are, added details, what things might have been really difficult that they were able to pull off or not pull off. And that then ties to it. Another way that people will oftentimes judge a competition is getting local usually something related to art. If there's somebody that has an art studio or does sculpture work, whether it's wood, sand, snow, as long as you know that form and the kind of the subtractive sculpting, then usually that's enough that they can, catch those various points in the snow as well. But having somebody that has that artistic background and knows what it takes is usually ends up where how they end up judging.
Sounds like ranked choice voiding meets the snow sculpting world.
Right, right.
Bob Lechtenberg, a member of the defending national snow sculpting champion team, Sculptora Borealis. Colin, your questions, comments about snow sculpting, still time to talk, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We learn about the intensity, the precision, the artistry and engineering of competitive snow sculpting with the U.S. National Championship underway in Lake Geneva. Winning team will be announced tomorrow. Join our conversation about this winter sport, your connections to snow sculpting. 800-642-1234. We have Bob Lechtenberg, part of the defending national champion snow sculpting team, Sculptora Borealis. All right, Bob, we're going to talk about the Disney Plus documentary Best in Snow for a moment. You led the snow sculpting team, the Bah Humbugs, and the team took second place. Here is Kermit the Frog attempting to join your team.
Well, yeah. I thought that maybe I can help with the carving, huh?
Oh, that'd be awesome.
Yeah. All right,
jump up there.
What do you do?
Not so fast! Not so fast! According to the scroll...
Yeah, you got a scroll there.
It's clearly stated that once the competition has begun, uh-huh. no team may add another person.
What about frogs?
Oh, let's see here. Subsection 4B. No. No frogs.
Yeah, that's too bad.
What was it like working on this project and coordinating a sculpture with Kermit and company?
It was quite interesting. I never knew how much goes into it. We knew that we were doing this this show. We knew kind of what it was about, but we didn't have many of the details. They kept a lot of it under wraps, and so we get out there, and it's this giant set. And my friend Keith Martin from Snice Carvings out in Colorado did the set for the show. His team did an awesome job. If you've seen the show, you've seen how much of it is out there. They did buildings out of snow for this little snow village. It was a massive scale, hundreds of people working there. They rented out the entire convention center, for all the equipment and various rooms and makeup and wardrobe and everything else. So it was really quite a process.
Well, working with Disney and Kermit is one thing, but what about working in real life with family members, other sculptors on your team, your father and wife? How do you navigate these competitive situations working so closely alongside relatives?
So we try to, we're ultimately the people that are sculpting are, the teammates. So, it's just a matter of being open and mindful of feedback and, not being too negative on things and making sure that everybody is felt like they are part of the team. And so that kind of pulls the primary focus of it. Of course, the support network at home, couldn't do it without my wife. We have three kids at home as well. So while I'm gone, she's got to hold down the fort. Much appreciation for the family and the support network to allow us to do these things.
What about the stress of the actual competition, and how do you calm your nerves when you just want to get to the next step and keep it moving as quickly as possible, because the time element, I am sure, is a real pressure.
Yeah, it definitely is. Once you've done it for a couple times, it's just you get in there and you just keep working. A lot of times we'll have kind of interim points that we can check ourselves against to make sure that we're making the progress that we need to. But it's just, keep on going, keep on going, keep on going.
Just pushing through it. How do aspects of snow sculpting carry over into a job as a project manager? I would imagine some of it informs the career, and some things from your career inform the snow sculpting competitions.
Yeah, it's a little bit more the latter of that. The career aspect, I can pull in more to the snow sculpting piece. There's not too much from snow sculpting that I can bring back into IT project management.
IT project management, they could use a breath of fresh air. No,
I mean, there is a bit of that creativity, right? Like, as you know, from an IT perspective, you do need some level of creative problem solving. So, you know, the problem solving aspect is probably the closest thing that ties to it, is how do you push through and find the solution and keep your project on track?
I would imagine it's a lot of attention to detail. And also, as you mentioned, those people skills.
Right, exactly.
As you go from one team to the next, as everyone is working really hard here, how are you feeling about this year's competition?
Good. There's a lot of good teams out there. Like I mentioned earlier, it's a great year to come down. A lot of good designs. A lot of them centered around animals this year for some reason. So there's a couple of otters, some turtles, frogs, fish. So that's great. The kids always love the animals, especially. But then a couple of other pieces with some really deep messages, you know, including ours and a few others. It'll be a great year. And one thing that I didn't mention before with the voting aspect, there is also a People's Choice voting that's available for the competition. So the people are another set of judges that I didn't mention before. And I think if you visit the Visit Lake Geneva Facebook page, they're doing a lot of updates. And I think the instructions for People's Choice voting will be out there as well. So you can browse through, see what sculptures, they'll have pictures up. Hear about, or, you know, read about what the messages are of the various pieces, meet the team members. There's a little bio for everyone. That's part of that Visit Lake Geneva and Winter Fun pages. Mm. So everybody can kind of read up and you can all vote for your favorite piece.
Well, Bob, all the best to you. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me. This is great.
Bob Lechtenberg, founding member of the defending national snow sculpting champion team, Sculptora Borealis. Sculpting action wraps up tomorrow afternoon with an award ceremony set for three sculptures on display as long as Mother Nature permits, right? I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.